President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this January the 23rd on the West Coast, now January the 24th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. So nice to have you with us tonight. We are actually going to go straight to tonight's guest, and I want to preface his introduction. His formal recognition, we'll say, just to let you folks know, those new listeners out there, that tonight's guest has been with me since the beginning of Evident Footprints. He's been a regular on the show. Back in those days when I started, he was on Tuesday nights, and we were doing three-hour shows, which is very, very difficult for anybody on radio. And we weren't doing commercials, as you know, or very sparingly were we actually breaking up the time at all. And it's difficult to bring 3 hours of a particular topic to a discussion in front of Lord knows how many people around the country and around the world. And this man is just an endless supply of scientific knowledge, or source of scientific knowledge. And he's quite an established inventor as well. And I can tell you that in the future you're going to be hearing more about his inventions. We have talked about them on the show. And we get into discussions of technology, physics, power, and metaphysics as well. And it really doesn't matter what topic we discuss. He's got a thermometer on the situation, or a barometer on the situation, telescope, binoculars, microscope, whatever it takes. He's very intuitive, very discerning, and we're going to talk about some things that went on the 20th on the Mall in Washington, D.C., some things that were captured on video. And despite what people write on blog sites and even the comments they make on shows like this, or on mainstream especially, something occurred on the 20th that is very significant, and we're going to talk about that tonight. And so I bring on board again our resident science advisor, my Friday co-host, I must say, because if we have any communications problems, he's very competent at taking over the role as host of this show. And I should make him the co-host, not just my guest. He is a scientist, an inventor, an author, lecturer, and teacher, and he's our good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome again to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, Don. Boy, what an introduction, I'll tell you. I've never been so widely praised. Thank you very much.
Well, you deserve it, and you're starting to get recognition around the world for some of your ideas, and we're not really going to go into those specifically tonight. We've talked about them on other shows, and I want to bring your scientific acumen and the knowledge you've gained through the many years of research that you've done and you're still doing, and your general take on paranormal activities, even though we can't really call these paranormal. In essence, we're going to discuss this issue that came to your attention very recently, by my way, about the appearance of a UFO over the inauguration site in Washington, D.C. You did have a chance to look at that photograph, did you not?
Oh, yeah. I looked at several photographs, and I'd say at least two or three of them are very compelling, because unlike the normal UFO-type thing, which is either blurred or somewhat distorted, you can very, very clearly see a craft in at least three of those pictures you sent me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty amazing, too, because it's evident that whoever was taking the pictures wasn't expecting to see that, but boy, they really caught it well.
Yes. Now, there was a video that was released on that in the process of airing the event on live television, minus the delay, we'll say. We think that when we're watching TV, that we're seeing everything in real time, and that's not necessarily the case. It's really a matter of when they decide to show it, and I'm sure you would agree. But if we're watching a live event, let's say that's being simulcast on all the networks, they're either all on the same delay clock, including the radio networks, or they don't really pay attention. Most people don't listen to the radio and watch TV at the same time. I know some people that watch sports that way because they can't stand the network announcers, you know. But in this case, these are highly, highly orchestrated events. And you had 2 to 3 million people on location. That speaks of a symbolism of acceptance and support by the American people. And I'm not saying people shouldn't support the President of the United States. But this is a very, very anomalous event. I'm sure you'd agree. You and I talked about it in many weeks past. Actually, in many months past, over the course of many months, we've been talking about this very issue of this election and a non-citizen or two non-citizens being the front runners for the White House. Absolutely insane that this has occurred in our country, and yet there is an explanation for it, but we'll save that for another show. That said, this event, which was captured on video and recorded, because many people recorded this, it shows up on the recordings that people made, whether it's on a VCR or on TiVo or whatever recording device people use. So it's on video. It was on CNN. When they realized what was in there, all of a sudden the picture got changed. Now, we had similar events occur on 9/11. And I would venture to guess that that craft that appeared by what other anomalies occurred was a craft being flown by Earth people or people who are affiliated with, let's say, reptilians. And it was a very sinister, very dark event. And I doubt that anyone from the Galactic Federation was up there watching these events with any amount of glee. So that said, this other event was captured. Now, the question is, who was there, number one? The technology we know was there to cloak one or more craft. And I know for a fact that there were more than one craft there. It so happens that they caught one on tape. And it's my job to find these things out. So when I speak about these things, I prefer to speak from some modicum of knowledge. And I'm sure you know what I mean.
I do indeed. Well, the real issue here, I think, is what were those beings doing up there on this particular day. It seems very clear to me that anybody with that advanced technology realizes it just wasn't a mid-year picnic that was going on in Washington, and they're fully aware of the consequences of the gathering, and I would almost guess that they were there, you know, to almost police it. Make sure that nothing, unsavory occurred. What would you think, Don?
Well, I think you're right on target, to tell you the truth. Now, I didn't tell you what to say. You said that on your own, and that's exactly my take, that that there are those that are interested in what's going on planet Earth in relation to. Now, this is sort of a segue for a moment into the issue that we discussed last week. The the fact that we brought out some rather alarming information, but still pertinent information as to what's going on. You know, we've had false flag events that have occurred in our more recent history. Ruby Ridge was sort of a false flag event. Waco, Texas was another false flag event. We had three separate incidents at the World Trade Center during the two during the Clinton administration, and then we had another one on 9/11. We had Oklahoma City, the Murrah building bombing, and it was blamed on Timothy McVeigh, but all the signs show that someone else was responsible for these events. And there always seems to be some government involvement in this, that they have a patsy lined up, or several patsies lined up. And in the case of 9/11, they had 19 patsies lined up, and yet 11 of them have been found by author, investigative researcher, Dr. Qasem Khalil, who has been on the show a number of times. In fact, you shared your microphone with him last week very graciously so we could bring out the information of the chatter that was picked up regarding an attack on seven U.S. cities. So anyone who is watching what's going on this planet has an interest in those types of activities, as well as what might have occurred on Inauguration Day. After all, we had someone who was knowingly being installed as the president of the corporate, capital letter, United States of America, the business concern, which is under administrative law and has nothing to do with the Republic of the United States. So we have a dichotomy in the inauguration, in the oath, the swearing in of the president was a farce, as far as I'm concerned, in both instances. And I hate to say that, but we have someone who committed egregious felonies in the process of getting into the office. It has nothing to do with the election. It has nothing to do with how people voted. It has to do with propaganda and mind control on the part of the mainstream media and a shadow government run by banking concerns internationally, like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, and I could go on and on, but everybody's heard this story countless times. It's the same people running the show. And there is another element. There is another element that is pushing these people's buttons, or pulling their strings, if you want to call it that. And we've talked about that on this show, as well as other people are talking about that on their shows. So we're not the only ones that are discussing this issue of a reptilian presence, or do abductions occur, or do people see UFOs? Do we have UFOs? Absolutely we have them. Do we have secret bases? Absolutely. Are many of them underground? Yes. That's a fact. Were those craft that were over Washington from those bases? The answer is unequivocally no. They were from elsewhere. And they had to hide that, and they had to cover that up so that the truth remains hidden from us. Any comment?
Well, I mean, that's been the protocol since Arnold's time. I mean, the whole idea of keeping the concept of the UFO and extraterrestrial intelligence and beings on other worlds from the public mind has been a very, very active campaign gone. Mm-hmm. We know this. And we know why. We know why. I mean, we don't, most people probably don't think about it, but if it was suddenly revealed just how much life there is throughout the galaxy and throughout the universe for that matter, and how prolific that force of creation has been in producing life, not only animal life, but other intelligent beings with technologies and with civilizations probably in excess of our own. I think that the effect on people's consciousness would be profound. You know, but this entire idea that this is the only planet in the entire sea of the universe with intelligent life, It just doesn't wash. But what it does do is make us feel very isolated and very unique, almost freakish for that matter, in the fact that we are cognizant and intelligent beings. And I think that this isolation and this idea of uniqueness has been exploited mercilessly for a very long time. I know when I was a kid, my dad used to read the Bible every night and after dinner. And I remember asking him about the passage in the Bible that says, in the house of the Father there are many mansions. Because intuitively, I took it to mean that in God's universe there are many places to live. Not just this rock, lots of other ones. My father was much more traditionally thinking man, and he didn't go along with that. He was a very staunch Catholic. But the idea never left my mind, and as you know, we've discussed on how many shows the type of investigations that I did as a younger man and the various circumstances I was involved in, which unequivocally pointed to the fact that there are definitely UFOs, and they come from numerous sources, including Earth.
Mm-hmm. Now, that said, and I hope you finish that statement, I don't want to interrupt you, you bring a thought immediately to mind, and that's the fact that there were pictures, there were moving pictures of this, and there were still stills made. Now, I'm presuming the stills, for the most part, were taken from the video itself. But there may have been people who have these images in still photographs. With all the people that were there, someone would have had a vantage point to pick that up on a camera. And I have the feeling over time, we're going to see some pretty incredible shots of those vehicles. That said, there are already discussions on the Internet, because they're not showing this on TV, mind you, okay? The mainstream media is not talking about this at all. CNN took it off their website even, so they don't even want this on the Internet. But it did come out on the Internet, and people are talking about it. And you hear these ridiculous comments being made, and I say absolutely insane, childish comments, and they're probably disinformation agents who are actually putting this stuff out there just to make it sound ridiculous, saying it's a bug that went across the camera lens, or it's a bird in the sky, okay, or it's an airplane, and then it makes you want to say, no, it's Superman. But
that's exactly
I had to
the
say
first
that.
Thing that went through my mind, exactly that.
Okay.
So I know now, exactly what you mean.
Yeah, so they're trying to attribute this to some kind of trickery. Well, let's talk a moment about trickery. And it comes back to the whole topic of why that event occurred on the 20th and Barack Obama. I've been looking recently at the photographs that they have put out. I looked at them very superficially in the beginning. I did make some cursory studies of subject content, but I didn't look at the composition of the photos. Anyone who is an artist out there, anyone who is a bona fide photographer or a forensic analyst, will understand what I'm talking about here. And that includes the intelligence agencies that are monitoring this program. It is obvious, it is blatantly obvious that Obama has been inserted into all of the photographs that make up the family photo album. And I use that in quotes, family photo album in quotes. What I'm seeing is that they have fabricated whole collections of people in these photographs, that they have cut people out and then put them back in, and they've done a pretty lousy job of it. There were anomalies occurring in these photographs, aside from the ones that identify that this guy is something other than human. And this is a stretch for anybody that's a supporter, but they're mind-controlled. they're trapped in a matrix, in an illusion, and they don't see what others are seeing. And so I'm going out on a limb saying this. I understand this, and people are going to have a problem with this because they've been promised hope, and we've been promised hope every minute we've been on this planet, every second, and yet we're still hoping, aren't we? We haven't achieved that hope, the realization of or the promise of that hope. And now we've been promised change, and I guarantee you we're going to get that, but it's nothing like what anybody thinks it is. Okay? So here we have a man, and if you just use a little bit of logic, and this is what made me go back into the photographs. I went into the photographs because I saw a birth certificate, or what's being called a certificate of live birth, that's a total fiction. Then I saw a selective service registration that's not only a total fiction, it's a forgery, it's a felony as much as the certificate of live birth. Then I saw documents from Indonesia that don't match the signatures of Stanley Ann Dunham, as they call her, in Washington State, the signing of her yearbook, for example. She didn't sign her name the way she signed it in these other documents. And it's very different. Any forensic analyst, anyone who is adept at forensically analyzing signatures, a handwriting expert, for example, will say, that's not the same person that signed that. Someone trying to copy it or just doing a lousy job, period, thinking that no one would ever make these connections. No one would ever examine the two samples, okay, attributed to the same person. So there is nothing but a fraudulent paper trail, and omission of documents is the biggest part of the fraud. The ones that have been presented are fraudulent in and of themselves without comparing them to anything else. Dates don't match on the same document. Or words and phrases that didn't exist in those days are used. Or incorrectly identifying a person's race as African. African is not a race. African is not even an indication of where, or denoting, is the word I was going to say. It's not even denoting where a person is from, other than a continent. But that doesn't make a person a citizen, being from a continent. And so the paper trail, the written documentation is totally a fabrication. I ask myself this question, and maybe I'm the first person to do that. If the papers are unreal, why are they unreal? Because there's no way to produce legitimate documents. So the only answer to the pictures is those are forgeries as well. And I began to see how these pictures were compiled. Changed from color to black and white to hide anomalies, such as the insertion of three different people into the same photograph, mechanically or electronically, digitally. It was done with Photoshop. And the photo was changed to hide that and to hide other things in the picture. So, I just want to say, those that are going to say that's not a UFO, look, let me tell you, that guy is not even in the picture with his grandparents. Number one, they're not his grandparents or his mother. So that's the first part of the charade. The second part is they never even posed together for the picture. He didn't pose together with his basketball team at his high school. Nor did he when he was in the elementary school or the middle school. He did not pose with those people. He was put into the picture, and it sticks out like a sore thumb once you begin to look for those anomalies. They're in every single photograph, except for where he appears by himself. But then we have an issue there that he doesn't look like the same person progressing through life like most of us do. He looks different. In every situation, he looks like it's another person, not the same person aging and progressing through life. So when we see a picture of a UFO, keep this in mind. We've been brainwashed unbelievably like never before in the history of this country, and thinking that this person is an American or has any connection to the United States other than he was put here by his Illuminati puppet masters who are themselves being controlled by reptilians. So now, since I said reptilians several times, it makes sense that there's a spaceship out there, but I can tell you that was not a reptilian craft. And I speak with authority on that. That's a rant and a half, but I'm spilling the evidence out. I'm pouring it out on the table. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, the interesting thing about it is, getting back to the reason why they're up there, you know, as you pointed out, things have been coming to light. Now, I actually saw an article, it was only about 2 or 3 days ago, and I meant to bring it to your attention, and I apologize now for having forgotten to do so. But it talked about the fact that somebody actually remembered about the missing nukes that disappeared when that plane was transporting those missiles from one base to another, and then they showed up with one short, and then the whole batch of them was questionable, and there was all this commotion, and then it all died down. This article suggested that those weapons had been appropriated for the distinct purpose of starting a conflagration of a nuclear variety. And you know as well as I do that not anybody can just go in there and steal nuclear weapons. It was orchestrated, you know, at very, very high levels, or it would never have been accomplished.
Yes.
But the most amazing thing is that despite the efforts of these subhuman individuals to bring that kind of grief upon mankind, the action was stopped. And actually, even if you look at the activities that they've been trying to generate in the financial and banking circles, the transfer of money, the hiding of funds, the use of illicit funds, and all this kind of stuff, even that has been very successfully meddled with, much to their astonishment. So, you know, these types of manipulations and the ability to stop some of these horrors from occurring are actually being orchestrated by a higher force and a force for good. Otherwise, I think we would already be in a very, very precarious position.
Mm-hmm.
And I attribute these interventions to these otherworld people that are patrolling our skies with good intentions. And I might also add, even though this is a little bit speculative on my behalf, I also add that I wouldn't be surprised if some of these people in these ships take a little bit of license in the way that they interfere with human events, because I know that the Prime Directive basically says that there shouldn't be any direct intervention, and that human history has to unfold on its own. But I think the reason why these people are allowed to take a little license is because the bad guys are also being directed and assisted by other races, which are
mm-hmm.
taking inordinate amount of license in what they are attempting to accomplish.
Exactly. That's my point there. Let's talk about this from the perspective, and you know, folks, this conversation is going to go wherever it will tonight. We didn't plan this. This is spontaneous. But it's a summation of what's occurred in the week or so preceding the election, or not the election, but the inauguration, and how John McCain could have won as many states as he won and lost the election. Obama shows on the red-blue map that he probably won about six states and maybe tied on a couple of others. Not many. Massively, John McCain outperformed him in the vote, and yet we had McCain resigning from the election, conceding from the election that night, well early before the votes were counted. No one would do that unless they were told to do that, number one. And this is all orchestrated from outside. So we're getting to the nitty-gritty now of who would do this. Let's say that the planet is being controlled by a reptilian race of people, underground, flying around in ships all the time. Many millions of people have seen these. They've also seen birds and they've seen bugs, and I think they know the difference between a flying saucer and a bug. So the things that people put on blogs are just more ridiculous. What's the word I want to use without getting vulgar? Let's say waste material, okay? That they expect to just put out there, and it handles any revelation of truth, any logical deductions that are made from information available and well known over many years, not just a recent phenomenon. So if you're going to take over a planet and do it with the cooperation of the people, to some extent, you have to have a secret group of people that are willing to work with you on that behalf, just to preserve their own rear ends. And they're allowed to do this with the accoutrements that go along with that duty. To become filthy rich, to murder and plunder, because it also fulfills this dark race, the reptilians', intention to rule the planet. So they don't have a problem if their minions create wars and kill people. They do it by direction. They're told what to do. And they happen to be called the oil companies, the pharmaceutical companies, the banks, on and on. And we see this being consolidated more and more. It's not expanding. You know, the universe is expanding outward. I think you would agree. But here, the system is collapsing. It's actually collapsing in on itself. So were those malevolent vehicles or flown by malevolent beings? I think not, because if they were, they would have wreaked havoc. But for people to ignorantly claim that those are bugs or birds or optical illusions, I mean, I didn't hear anybody call them weather balloons. That's the usual one. And I didn't hear anybody say it was swamp gas. I'm sure there was plenty of swamp gas on the surface of the mall with all those people there. And certainly what was being carried over the airwaves was replete with swamp gas. And
interestingly enough, did anybody even say that it was a UFO?
Well, yes, not the media, but people have said, yes, I did. I did. I actually identified the craft.
No, I don't mean that way. I mean in the media.
No, absolutely not. Go ahead.
That in itself is an indication that it's been tampered with, because enough people believe in the UFOs, and statistically alone, somebody at least should have been able to say, well, it looks like a UFO to me. But the mere fact that nobody made that distinction in the release that was controlled by the media automatically tells you that it was deliberately left out. They don't want somebody even thinking in that direction.
Yes. Well, you know, then we go back to, you know, the hieroglyphic drawings of the ruins in many, many societies and civilizations around the world, these archaeological digs that show that they had UFOs then. I mean, we've got in hieroglyphics drawings of flying saucers. What were these people, just psychic and able to see, to predict what was going to be happening in the year 2008? This has been going on for centuries, and really for millennia it's been going on. And
there have been conflicts here before too, even overt conflicts. You know, we've talked about it on the shows before, Don, where there are ruins throughout the world that show scarring from nuclear weapons and high temperature blasts and all kinds of things, not to mention the constructions of megalithic size, which are all over the planet. And we know full well that I don't care how many slaves you have, you can't lift something that's 2,000 tons. And yet these things are all manipulated and cut and precisely arranged as if they're toy blocks.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely there have been technologies present in the past as well as now that are of a extraplanetary origin. There's no question about it.
Oh yeah, we can tell that just from the desert areas in certain parts of the planet that there was massive nuclear waste there, and likely still is. The half-life of nuclear weapons, if I'm not mistaken, is somewhere like 4.5 billion years, isn't it, for the radiation to totally dissipate?
Yeah, it depends on which isotope, you know, but it also depends on the severity of the blast and what the nature of the weapon was. But even in cases where the half-life may have already timed out, there's other evidence. There are huge puddles of fused glass, which are absolutely circular in origin, way out in the in the deserts in various parts of the planet, that could only have been caused by a thermonuclear source of heat. And interestingly enough, some of them are in the area of Sodom and Gomorrah. And that raises a lot of interesting questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is just so much evidence that we are not alone that it's amazing to me that many more people don't just realize that we can't be alone. What's happening on all the rest of that real estate out there, guys? There's only hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of planets.
Yeah. And, you know, there's actually, I would say there's trillions of planets just in our galaxy. At least a trillion, we'll say. And now, how many of those are inhabited? I do not know. But I can tell you NASA doesn't know either. They may be able to speculate. They may have been told how many there are. Certainly, they have been told something. Or they wouldn't be up on Mars, and they wouldn't be up on the Moon, and they wouldn't be up trying to get up to Saturn and Venus. And I don't mean with a probe. What we're being told about Mars and the Moon is again a fairy tale. It's truer what they're telling us than what they're telling us about Barack Obama. I can tell you that. He couldn't cut it in a cartoon. You couldn't make that story work in a cartoon. And yet it's been dumped on the whole world as a reality. This is how mind control, this is how propagandized everyone is. And yet, there are some of us that have not succumbed to that. We may not say everything correctly that it pleases everyone. We may say way too much than they want us to share. Or we may not say enough for their liking. Who knows? But all we can do is try to get at the truth and think reasonably while we're thinking and discern what's going on. Now, we reported this false flag, the series of false flag events, and I'll tell the listening audience that was a very real possibility, and it still is. But for the time being, it's been thwarted. And pretty much on all accounts, everyone else that knows about it feels the same way. But we must remain on guard because this reality has not gone away. And we've talked on this show about solutions, about preparing for some event? Because these, I want to say people, but you can't even call them people. The ones that are pulling the strings are not even people. They have a certain amount of awareness and they have physical bodies. And they definitely have a plan as to what they want to do. And they've been able to scare the bejesus out of those that are doing their bidding. It's the only explanation for the murder and the insanity going on in this world, is that they're deathly afraid of what will happen to them if they don't comply. And that's a serious conversation in a sense, and yet it liberates us because we don't have to listen to them. We don't have to. We are so much more powerful than they give us credit for, and that scares the dickens out of them. It really does, because there are people who are waking up or who are coming to an awareness of what's going on. Now, I read where those videos of the UFOs were posted, or I should say flying saucers, because UFO means unidentified flying objects. I identified them as flying saucers or vehicles belonging to a race of people from another part of our galaxy. And they're all over the place. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of these out in space. But we can't see them from our vantage point. We're not aware of that. We're not aware of what's right in front of our nose down here. So how can we be expected to understand that? Yet there are people that know. And I'm sure you'd agree with that, Jim. You yourself have had some of those experiences.
Oh, I agree 100%. And I agree with you also on the fact that there are others who know. I've had conversations with physicists, with astronomers, with scientists of all kinds off the record. I've even had conversations with authority figures who and airline people who will tell you in private. They'll never say it in front of anybody because they're too concerned about their careers or their families or whatever. But you'd be surprised how many people know that there's something else up there. And it stands to reason anyway. I mean, if you look at the mathematics behind it, or the statistics behind it alone, out of all those trillions and trillions of planets, if this Earth was the only one that had produced and supported intelligent life, then we'd be freaks. And when did you ever see a process in nature where something only happened once? Never. It always repeats itself. You know? Always. And with all that real estate out there, I'm sure they're just bristling with life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be there to see it, and I don't have to have a rocket ship of my own to know that that's a truth, and that's, you know, my truth meter pegs when I think about that. I know darn well it's real.
Yes, as does mine, and I certainly don't have a rocket ship. But I've got a telescope and a magnifying glass and binoculars. And I've got spiritual discernment that tells me so. And it's interesting that when you point out the experts, there's a common thread that prevents them from speaking about this in public. And it's all based upon fear, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Now that you brought that up, that same mechanism is used in all sorts of areas. I mean, you don't have to talk about flying saucers and extraterrestrial life. When I was working years ago with Ivan Sanderson, something as innocent as a Viking civilization found in northern Minnesota was explicitly reburied under the direct order of the Smithsonian Institute shortly after it was discovered and archaeological processing had begun. Now, you would say, well, why in the world would anybody do that? Well, the Vikings weren't supposed to be here. They didn't, weren't supposed to have a colony established in northern Minnesota. So, you know, according to the history books, things happened in a very, very concise manner. You know, we started off as jellyfish or swamp gas or God knows what, became cavemen, and then slowly worked our way up through all the civilizations until we are here now, and it's very linear in its progression, and there's no room for any anomalies. Well, guess what? It's the other way around. The entire universe is a bloody anomaly, and linear progressions are in themselves very, very rare, except when we produce them on purpose.
Well, if you take it from the viewpoint of an archaeologist or an anthropologist or a historian, it's as though we've jumped from Cro-Magnon man to the New York Central Banking System, and there's nothing in between. And I think Cro-Magnon man probably had it more together back then, because at least if somebody gave him a hard time, he had a club to hit somebody over the head with.
Well, that's true. And you know what? Now you've really opened up an interesting situation, because I think you've solved inadvertently one of the greatest mysteries. Because if you study anthropology, one of the questions that's asked all the time is, what happened to Neanderthal man? He was here one minute and he's gone the next. Well, now we know that they are all clustered together in the banking industry.
And you're crediting me for that. Okay. Well, I mean, listening to you talk, that's the picture that you drew. You know, it debunks the Christopher Columbus story, you see, if you allude to the Vikings having been here, right?
Oh, and they're not the only ones either. I mean, there's a lot of records. For instance, I'll give you an example. They found anchors that were typical of early Japanese military vessels off the coast of California. And the way they know that they're Viking, Japanese anchors, is because in those days they didn't have a big steel thing shaped like a modern ship's anchor. They had essentially a large stone with a hole drilled through it, attached with a rope to the ship, and they actually used to drop that thing overboard, and sometimes the rope would break, and they'd lose their anchor, and they've actually found them up and down the Pacific coast. And in Mexico, there's been plenty of evidence of Chinese visitations to Mexico.
Yeah.
And Gene Savoy, who we did a whole program on, he demonstrated in his own lifetime that he could sail from Peru all the way across to Easter Island and into Hawaii and all over the place using nothing more than a reed boat. And let's not forget Thor Heyerdahl, who demonstrated that he could sail on another reed ship, the Contiki, all the way from the Mediterranean to the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
And there is so much evidence that history is nothing like what it's portrayed. And it's just an absolute sin that the people that are in charge of the educational system in this country are doing their best to prevent people not only from knowing the facts, but they don't even want them to think in those directions.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned, this is very synchronistic, because you mentioned these anchors that you attribute to, let's say, a Japanese navy. I always wondered where the name Japan came from, and at least the American version of it, or, you know, the anglicized version. And in my study of metaphysics, I came across some information about the continents as they were in earlier times. And there's a region of the United States that was part of what was considered the continent of Pan.
Mm-hmm.
And Japan means from Pan. And so throughout all of these geological events that occurred, some of a disastrous nature where land masses are shifting and the water is filling in the gaps, you had the rearrangement of continental shelves, and Pan, for all intents and purposes, disappeared and became Japan as they fled the circumstances of those drastic geological calamities, we'll call them. And it would explain why you would see something like that. I'm not saying that they didn't sail there and drop anchor or have a ship sink or what have you, but you can see even in some Mexican people have an Oriental look to their eyes. You see these anomalies all over the planet, actually, that these societies traveled the whole planet.
And well,
some
actually,
people, go ahead.
It's interesting you bring that up, because one of my favorite explorers, as you well know, was Colonel Percival Fawcett, who went all through South America back in the 20s, establishing borders for various governments. And he went to places that no white man has been, probably even to this day, and brought back a whole series of interesting photographs. And there's one picture in his book that shows a woman somewhere in the Mato Grosso area of Brazil that's holding a baby, which is partially clad. And you can see the top of the buttocks of the baby, because it's resting on the mother's arm in the photograph. And he points out that there is a phenomenon, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's in the region where a tail would be, if humans had a tail. And it's like a dimple or a depression in the skin and, mm-hmm. and in the spine. And, that particular phenomenon is mostly related to the Mongol race, and yet here it is showing up in a family tucked away in the wilds of South America. So you know, there's been all kinds of crisscross traffic around the world for eons, and it's absurd to think that everything just happened in a certain way, and there was no interference and no cross traffic and no transatlantic or transpacific traffic until modern times. It's just idiocy.
Yeah, you know, even today, you just look at the weather. I mean, we've had snow for several weeks now. I think we're going on our third week without a major thaw. The snow is still on the ground, but we have global warming. You know, thank God for the global warming. You know, we'd be buried in snow. It's one lie after another, isn't it, Jim? And I think of Admiral Byrd. I tried doing a little bit of research into that, and I came across a few more accounts of what happened when he went down to the South Pole. Basically, was either told or just scared out of his wits and turned around after a few weeks what was supposed to be at minimum 6 months of an expedition with soldiers, too. Didn't just go down there with a group of people that had nothing better to do than tag along. They went down there with warships, and they were probably there to investigate reports of Nazi flying saucers. And he came back rather abruptly, and very little information came out about that. You would think such a momentous event would be recorded in history. But, you know, we pay for it, and they don't tell us what it is. And
right.
Here we are describing now in 2008, and we have been for the last almost 2 years, you and I, talking about trillions of planets. And in our banking system, it's only recently, in the last couple of years, The word trillion has popped up, isn't it? It's always been in millions and billions. And to even think that something might cost $100 billion was out of the question. Now, you're lucky if you can build a stadium for less than $1 billion. That they pad the prices of everything. Well, they say, well, the dollar's not worth anything. Well, they made it that way. It's an illusion to begin with. What do you expect it to become? Real? But now they're dealing in money and the corruption to the amounts of trillions of dollars. If nothing else, money is a symbol that gives them permission to do something, right? Anyone who has it. They have a means through which to acquire material objects or to own portions of the planet or to rent or lease portions of the planet is really what it is. Because ultimately, these reptilians think that they own it or have blackmailed, literally blackmailed, our leaders into playing a role masquerading as our leaders, masquerading as our benefactors who are really concerned about our quality of life as the whole thing is falling apart before us. So those craft in the sky over Washington were a blessing, really. A blessing of things that are to come, and a sign of a reality that is definitely more real than the crap they're feeding us.
Well, I certainly agree with that.
So, I guess, where is this going? Well, it's amazing how people. And it's probably the intelligence agencies that are putting people up to write this stuff on these blog sites and make these comments that eventually the public sees. And it's just to create the dichotomy, the argument that anyone who talks about these things is absolutely foolish. If that's the case, why are, next to the pornography sites, why are UFO or ufology sites the most frequented on the whole internet? Why is that? Is that because people really would like to know, or are people looking for verification or further understanding of what they already know to be true?
Well, there's a racial memory too, Don, and it affects all of us. And the human race is very old. And even if we don't have proof of certain things in our own lifetime, there are inclinations and perceptions which travel with our souls, you might say, from one incarnation to another. And I really believe that people know instinctively, on account of that kind of thing, that there is more to the universe than what we're being told. And the ones that are a little bit more daring, a little bit more audacious, they're going to be the ones that frequent these articles and websites that deal with this material. They may not get all their questions answered, but there's a certain satisfaction, I think, in finding out that there are others who feel the same way. It isn't that they get anything that proves definitively that there are extraterrestrials or civilizations on other worlds, but there's a certain comfort in knowing that you're not the only one who thinks there might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, there's a dichotomy there because of all the disinformation and the illogical explanations were given, and I think it would be interesting to ask the government, ask the banks, to prove to us that they're not stealing from us, or that they've never stolen from us, right? Rather than us prove that they are, let's ask them to prove that they're not. And I guarantee you they can't do that, because they can't get along with each other. Like Chris Story, the British publisher of International Currency Review, often says they're like rats in a sack biting each other. And that's really what's happening. And so what would be the significance of these craft showing up? that there was a threat of a false flag event, and they were monitoring a another potential event. That's the kind of madness that has been ruling this earth for thousands of years. That if they don't get their way, just kill them.
Yeah, and you know, you brought up a very good point there about asking the banks to prove to us that they are not stealing. It's actually a very, very simple thing to do. It doesn't require a lawyer or anything else. You just march down to the bank where your mortgage is established and ask them for, that you don't even want to possess it. You just want to see your original note. And they will never be able to produce it.
Yeah. That's pretty revealing. I'm in the near future. I think it's he's scheduled for next week, Monday. I'm going to have Walter Burian on. Walter is an ex money man from the Big Apple area, and he came across a report that's called the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. And this is the real deal about where the money is going. He sort of stumbled across it, and he's come to the same conclusion that I've been saying. I saw different documents, but I'm sure some of what I saw is actually in those reports. And he came out with a video that, I'm gonna have posted on my site very soon. It is on his CAFR, C-A-F-R, one.com website, and he goes into a very, very detailed dissertation on how all of this is occurring. And guess what he mentions? You and I have talked about this. The word derivatives sound familiar?
Oh, yeah.
Hedge funds, real estate, HUD, Council on Foreign Relations, all of these terms that I've been using are in his report. And it's really heavy on the math side, I have to tell you, as far as the figures. But what's interesting is my audience have heard me mention figures like $667 trillion. And he comes up with a figure of about 600 trillion. So we're very close. What's a few more trillion, right? What's a few trillion here, whether it's up on Mars or on the moon or in some underground bases or in some tunnels or some high-tech technology that's going to be used against the people on this planet? What creation of God would turn on itself like a cancer? Or like the AIDS virus. What I mean, I'm saying turn on its own people. I'm picking up an echo here. I don't know if you're hearing.
Well, I think you answered your own question. I mean, it's not a creation of God's. It's a creation of something demonic.
Mm-hmm. Well, so That appearance of that craft then was to monitor what's going on. Yes, I'm here, Jim. Are you there, Jim?
Yeah, I'm here. What happened to you?
I've been here all along. Something strange is going on with the sound here.
Yeah, all of a sudden I couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
And I guess you couldn't hear me either.
All of a sudden, we got an echo. Evidently, we hit somebody's hot button.
Yeah, well, that happens quite frequently on this show, doesn't it?
Okay, we've got a caller here, so that might be the source of the anomaly here. Cecil tried to adjust that. Who's on the line, if you could tell us your name and where are you calling from?
This is Ron from Pennsylvania. I've spoken before.
Oh, how are you doing, Ron?
Okay, I hope I didn't cause the anomaly with the sound with you guys. I apologize if I did.
No, that's you. As long as you're not on a speakerphone.
No, I'm not.
It's just a matter of tweaking the buttons a little bit. Welcome to Evidence Footprints. Do you have a question or comment for my guest, Jim Murray?
I have a couple of minutes of comments. I want to pass on some things. I've been listening to for the beginning of the show, and I had some former experience with classified projects and advanced technology, and I'm going to pass on a few things for a couple of minutes without getting too revelatory. What I did for a few years was work for a company that essentially we created, made, and sold technology. And the flying saucer situation enters into this sort of with reasons that I'll go into in a moment. But probably you or your guest has heard of the term principle of conservation. What that simply is means that you can't create something from nothing or make it entirely disappear. Energy comes in different forms, heat energy, light energy, and so forth. You are taking those elements within the principles of physics and you're manipulating them in such a way to produce an effect of which you do work. Starting out with the telephone, the radio preceding that, the telegraph, and then advances in laser optic technology and so forth, and into nanotechnology today. All of this is in a progression. Now, progress is only something that technology allows you to do. And what we did is we took certain principles of physics and we manipulated them and did things that other people did not do. We had some of the three-letter agency guys come and visit us. And how this works in normal everyday practice is somebody will come in to you and say, well, we have $200,000 allocated to make you guys win or lose. We would like to be able to make a pocket-sized pogo stick that would jump from here a quarter of a block away, you know, just as an analogy. And can you guys do this? Well, the engineering team sits down with their guys, and they said, probably. So they embark on the task of making this gadget with completely different technology than is conventional. Now, if you want to put this into the terms of what I did there, I would have to say that while the engineers, it's safer taking a flying saucer, which I'll get into in a moment, they made the inner guts in the engine and I made the craft. And what they made, I made the outside, they made the inside. Each of us may not know what the other does. Sometimes it's like that, sometimes it's not.
You're talking about a saucer here, Ron?
Well, I'm talking about in general, yeah. Now,
okay.
If we go back to the 50s and 40s and 30s, there was a guy by the name of Townsend Brown, and I have his patent here. You could send $3 to the patent office, and they'll send it to you, and sometime on the Internet for nothing. And what he did was illustrate a principle, and he made a little gadget. It looked like a merry-go-round. And what it was a gadget comprised of non-ferrous material that a magnet would not stick, copper, wood, brass. And he actually got this thing into motion by the application of voltage. I don't have the patent in front of me. It's probably next door. So if you would expand upon that idea, he merely made this model as a demonstration of that which he stumbled across. Mm-hmm. He had a resistor on a table or something and accidentally zapped it with a lot of voltage, and this thing levitated and jumped.
Mm-hmm.
He was intrigued by this, and one thing led to another. Now, if you would take what he expanded upon 40, 50 years ago, be able to control it, increase the voltage, and apply the progress to it, there's your flying saucer or something similar.
Okay, can we have can we let Jim Murray respond to this, Ron, for a moment?
Yeah.
Okay, Jim, you want to comment on what you heard so far?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with Townsend Brown's work, and I know what Ron is alluding to. And as a matter of fact, we talked about it once on one of our shows.
Yeah.
And the original argument that was advanced against his discovery was the rationalization that the thrust created by this high voltage was due strictly to the ionization of air. And then, in order to demonstrate that there was something really truly novel here, he repeated the experiment in a vacuum chamber, and he got the same amount of thrust. which is very interesting, because then you can't attribute it to the motion of charged ions of air. And so eventually the people who were involved with it came to the realization that it was a demonstration of an etheric thrust or an ethereal drive mechanism that was making use of a coupling to the ether. So it doesn't surprise me that the other work was done on this in secret. I really love to hear more about what Ron has to say.
Well, what Brown theorized without actually seeing what's going on, the positive and negative ions, as you mentioned, what he had done was apply the voltage in such a fashion that the attraction and repulsion, say you had a circular disc or a box or whatever, if you applied that work in one corner, it would go in that direction. You increase the voltage, decrease it one side, and put twice the voltage, would go twice as fast in the other direction. So he was definitely onto something, and I firmly believe that a number of our people have picked up upon that and developed that. Now, if you remember back, the kind of work that I did was, you remember the original James Bond movies with Sean Connery, where he pulls out the fountain pen and opens the, takes the cap off, and this little antenna umbrella comes up, and he talks and speaks with people and listens to them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a very good friend of mine, engineer, made that. That's a real thing. And I'm very good terms with this guy. He's older now and retired. But most engineers are only working within the realms of their own disciplines. They really don't know what's going on.
So yeah.
I've tapped our people and asked them what they think of this phenomenon, and they said most of them don't know. They said, well, I'm sure anything's possible, but they're not familiar with it. They haven't seen it. Most engineers probably are not. Now, that technology's locked into a very small group of people, and we may or may not see the effects of that. Now, since that time, those James Bond-type gadgets have advanced to the point where there was a program on where Roger Moore was showing some of this. It was a documentary with James Bond stuff on, if you would. And they were, the Russians were talking over a beam of infrared light. Well, since that time, they have talked over other forms of light, because I know I made the gadget. So that stuff does work.
Well, yeah, we have infrared is part of how they do optical interfaces between computers and musical instruments and
right.
tape recorders and that.
Well, we're way beyond that stage now. All this kind of stuff is fine as long as it's not used for malevolent or nefarious purposes. However, we always know since man has two legs, he's always going to think of something damaging to do to the universe.
Yeah,
or
well,
to other people. Now,
Ron, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
From what you heard of the show tonight, from the topics, and we're all over the place, but, you know, there's this recurring theme of who's pulling the strings.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
I would have to say 90% or better, yes.
Okay.
I think there are influential external forces at work here that
mm-hmm.
people don't understand. Somebody brought it up the other day, and they put it in pretty good terms. It has to do with the spiritual. There's the good and the bad. And there are things beyond our control or beyond our knowledge the average person doesn't know about. But my own particular feeling is, yes, it's very real.
Okay, I'm glad to hear you say that.
Well, programs such as this one you have do bring this kind of thing out. Now, this is so alien to people's thinking, no pun intended, that it's way beyond that which they have normally been conditioned to accept. Like, go back to the principle of physics. People think, well, you light a match and it produces heat. That's true, but there are many things that we can do with that that would make that match seem kind of blasé. And this is what we did where I worked. We did a lot of weird things with technology that normally shouldn't work, but they do, and they work very well for a particular purpose. Now, there's a lot of things out there I have never seen. That doesn't mean they don't exist. That just means I haven't seen them.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, if I can interject something here for a moment, what you just said brought the thought to me in a conscious way that all technology is an artificial expression of what is real.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
I can go for that.
But how about you, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. I've always alluded to that. Anything we create already exists in some form, and all we do is realize it's there and then capitalize on it.
Okay.
Well, the statement some people, engineers have used is man is not capable of abstract thought. It's merely an assemblance of that which is already here. And, going back to the principles of physics again, we just manipulate that. So that's always been here. We just present it in a different plate. Now, the educational system in this country really irritates me. When our guys came to town, and about 2 years before I came on board with them, they had went to our local brand new high school to see the latest in all science and electronics courses, because we were looking to hire some technicians out of there right out of the high school and pay them a little money and have them learn things. Well, even the basic courses that they were teaching were almost pathetic, because this engineer I mentioned went up there and scrutinized the curriculum, and it was nowhere near up to snuff, and we'd have to be teaching them what they should have been learning in the schools. Now, since the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, our educational system has been sabotaged, and it's been compromised quite a bit. There is not a race of particularly bright Hindus over there that could come over here and outshine us. It's that they haven't had the problems with their educational system that we have had here. We have too much government
intervention. Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. We talk about that quite frequently on this show. That's part of the same propaganda that spills over into the mainstream media.
Well, Charlotte Isherby wrote a real good book on that, which I haven't purchased yet, but I've seen other examples of this. Our educational system is actually pathetic, and if the federal government gets the hell out of it and allows the states to manage it themselves as a competition between the states thing, if you would, or privatize it, I think you're going to see us soar, because we were the best that there was, and we still are, but we're playing against a stacked deck. We've had too much damage done to our system.
Mm-hmm. Or really, I think it even has to go to the local level.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, because I see the states every bit as corrupt as the federal government. And you know, if I don't want to get into patriot issues here, but it can be proven out that way, as well as through the corrupt banking system.
Well, the homeschoolers shine much more than the state and the federal managed systems do. The 12 years of the public full system really doesn't even work as well as the private homeschoolers. One of our engineers I worked with, he has a PhD in electrical optical engineering, and his wife's a child's book publisher.
Uh-huh.
Nice people, beautiful people. They homeschool their three daughters. She writes children books at home. She has a studio, and he does his thing with outside companies. Very, very bright guy. And as far as the social interaction of children absolutely being needed with those on the outside, they will be stifled or suffer. Nah, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need that. Kids know how to play. They don't care where they are. They don't need that social interaction as our agencies would have you believe that they need. They just need the proper education, and his three daughters have it. So homeschooling is winning way above. That's why the government hates it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I had the opportunity this week to speak with some local college students, and they were telling me about a particular course that they have, and they were given these absolutely insane formulas to talk about, and I couldn't even describe it. They're going to try to get me a copy of the book, the textbook that they're using in this course, but it's mixing words and letters and numbers and thoughts just what I said right there gives you the idea that it's just pure insanity. And they collected the textbooks, and they're going to replace it with another book, but it's got a CD that goes along with it. And I'm thinking that they're probably, it's just a feeling that I get discerning what's going on there, that there's probably something subliminal in the CD, or it's going to be some way of programming them that's involved. Why would you have to create an audio archive of the text in the book, in other words.
Well, it's easy to answer. I could figure that one out. One more thing in closing, and then I want to tie the line up for anybody else that may call. I'll give you answers to your question. If you have watched the History Channel, just take an example. They used to call it the Hitler Channel. Well, you're sitting there watching your History Channel, which I took the cable out. I don't even want to watch the electric toilet anymore. I'd rather do other things. You're watching the documentary, and you're listening to the audio portion and so forth. Okay, go through it again, but turn the sound off. Now what do you think when you're watching that? That's what mm-hmm. the graphics are there. The graphics are there and the audio together for manipulation reasons.
Yes.
If you take one or the other out, it doesn't work anymore. And
uh-huh.
you can get a better perspective. Now, if you remember back in the 20s and 30s and maybe up to the 40s, I have a collection of old books, your engineering books and science and physics and so forth. You could actually learn from those textbooks. Because back in those days, when those fellows went to school and went to college, you had to be bright in addition to having some money. And they didn't care who you were. If you didn't pass the grade out, you went. Now, one of the big, there was two damaging things to our educational system that happened before and right after World War II. Number one is when Hitler put the run on a lot of the subversives over in Germany, they came over to the United States, and a lot of them went into our public educational systems, and they gradually started to subvert that, because one of the groups that he ran out was the communists. I mean, the handwriting was on the wall, and that's too long of a commentary for this.
Yeah.
Also, one of the damaging things to our educational system, and you know this by the textbooks. I went to college for a couple of years till I ran out of money, and the books were absolutely pathetic. You cannot learn from them. The guys were very bright that wrote those earlier books. Now, when World War II ended, millions of GIs were dumped onto the American market, and colleges and universities are a business, too. They're there to get some money. And what better way than to lobby, which they did very hard, for the GI Bill of Rights, which sent a lot of these guys to college. Now, in order to have those college people there, they had to lower their standards, lower than that which was in the teens, 20s, and 30s previous, as I had mentioned. Had they not done that, those guys could not have come in at an entry level and got to college. The colleges wanted the money, so they had to lower the standards. And that
yeah.
was the beginning of the gradual end to the old-time college system, which was excellent. The GI Bill of Rights was one of the most damaging things to our educational system there was.
Well, there are a lot of reasons.
You're right.
Yeah, you know, college has become athletics, and it's become the, let's say, the root of the professional sports entertainment media that has
mm-hmm.
has taken everybody over. You know, they make it, they used to have NCAA rules that you had to graduate college or you couldn't enter professional sports. Now you don't even have to finish your freshman year. If they see that they have a marketable, commodity in a student in a college based on their height or their weight or some athletic prowess that they have, they will allow them to move into the professional ranks to the detriment of an education. And I'm not saying the degree is where it's at either, because that's part of the system. That's your license to practice, and so they get you in the matrix that way too.
I know that's been going on for years, because I have a distant friend of mine. I haven't seen him. He's in poor health now. He used to pay. Excuse me. He used to play for the Denver Broncos, and he's not particularly gifted when it comes to cerebral horsepower. He's a nice guy and everything, but the tutors had to practically live with this guy to get him through school. I mean, it was sweat and work the whole way academically, but
uh-huh.
they needed him for the athletics. He's a good football player, but that's been going on for a long time.
Okay. Well, Ron, thanks for calling in. Your information was very enlightening, very interesting, and I'm glad that you agree with us to some extent. It wouldn't be a problem if you disagreed. It would spark some intelligent debate, but nonetheless, you're confirming what we're saying, and we're just skimming the surface here. We could do many, many shows on this topic.
Oh, yes.
But I felt that this issue of the craft scene over Washington and the fact that there are people who know where that craft is from or what the craft was doing there.
Mm-hmm.
And you've confirmed what Jim and I have been talking about on the show tonight, so I thank you for your input. And
okay,
do
take
call
care,
again.
Gentlemen. Catch you again.
Okay. Jim, what's your take on that call?
Oh, I enjoyed that guy. I thought he was interesting, and I could tell from the way he was speaking that he knew far more than he wished to expose. But I was grateful for his support, and I think that if we can continue in this vein, sooner or later there'll be other people that'll come forth and give us a similar amount of information. I tell you, I don't know who the fellow was, but he was the kind of guy that I'd love to sit down with, you know, in some quiet corner and discuss a lot of this with our hair completely down, if you know what I mean.
Is there such a place with a quiet corner these days?
Oh, yeah, they're very quiet corners. They're just loaded with microphones and cameras.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Jim, we're out of time. It's been a wonderful show. We had a couple of anomalies there with the sound. I hope you heard everything. There were a couple of words of Ron's that I missed, but I could sort of pick up what he was saying once they got ironed out. So I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. And, you know, this is something we can pick up again anytime you want to. It is very interesting. It's interesting what comes out as we start connecting the dots here. You know, we've got confirmation that these things we're describing are being produced. They are part of what's out there in the corporate world, in likely in the military industrial complex. What we're being shown and what's going on are two different things. All the rest of the duality in this reality demonstrates. Any closing comments?
Yeah, I would like to touch on one little thing that gentleman brought up, because it's a real, real stickler in my world. And he's absolutely right about the older books. I mean, my whole collection of engineering books probably go back to the 20s and 30s and maybe on up to the 40s and 50s. Simply because of the fact that they contained real information.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a modern college physics book today, it's the equivalent of the stuff that I was studying in high school. And that's no lie. So, I mean, the degradation in the educational system is really, really something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
someday we should talk about it.
Yeah, I found high school was a lot easier, more difficult than college. Listen to me, I can't even talk. High school was much more difficult than college, and it was noticeable from day one. It wasn't something that you notice over a period of time. It was as though you regressed back to 9th or 10th grade and the level of difficulty of what you were learning. And I'm not saying that learning has to be difficult, per se. Somehow, it's as though what makes no sense is what's difficult. And there's a lot of nonsensical stuff that's being promoted in the textbooks. I can tell you from a musical perspective or from a language perspective that what I learned on my own is more advanced than what they teach on a college level.
Oh,
and I studied,
sure.
You know, the typical music history, and, you know, they want you to study Gregorian chant, which puts you automatically in this vibration that really has nothing to do with today's reality in music. If you it should be an elective. If you want to focus on Gregorian chant for 3 months, sign up for that course. But they make it part of a course that really goes nowhere. It's just everything in the past, pulling us backward, you know, not allowing us to be creative. It's one thing to learn the fundamentals. You know, we studied Arnold Schoenberg and Walter Piston, who were some of the best music theoreticians. If you wanted to learn theory, you studied those too. Piston wrote several books, and so did Schoenberg. And these guys were real musicians. They were composers. They weren't pedagogues that were put there to figure out a way to brainwash people with meaningless tripe. And so many of the textbooks are that way. I can recall in high school, not that I was argumentative with my teacher, but when my French teacher wanted me to mispronounce a word or that I was speaking incorrectly in French, I had a problem with that. And I let the teacher know that I had a problem with the fact that her pronunciation was awful. And I suppose if I had taken Spanish or German or Latin, I would have found the same problem.
Well, the same thing exists in the technical fields. When I was in high school, I took theory of equations, for goodness sakes. I took matrices. I took all kinds of advanced mathematics. And I guarantee you they don't teach that in today's high school. So,
sure.
Unfortunately, we're spiraling down.
Yes. Well, Jim, you're not just a scientist, you're an inventor, and I know that your creative juices are in full gear currently, and I wish you the best of success in the things that you're working on, and in the 7 days between now and your next appearance on Evident Footprints, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight with all the work that you do all week long and the many hours you put into your work. I appreciate you coming on so late.
Well, thank you, Don, but I enjoy it too, and I think it's fulfilling some kind of purpose. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
And I also think you're a terrific host and a good friend, so thank you, and let's continue the good work.
Okay, the check is in the mail. All right, you have a good night, and don't hang up yet, okay?
Okay.
Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Jim Murray, and he's my co-anchor on Friday nights and our resident science advisor. Special thanks go out to Ron from Pennsylvania, who contributed some wonderful information on tonight's show, as well as Doug and Don Newsom, who make Evident Footprints possible, and they make BBS Radio possible as well. Seth Hendrick, and most of all, you, our listening audience, for tuning in. Have a wonderful weekend. Join us next week. We've got more great shows lined up. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.